Peter B. Collins News and Comment, Wednesday, December 18th, 2013.
Hello, NSA. I just called you to say I love you.
I love you
because you.
Because you
really listen.
Now we know the NSA really listens. All our phone calls, all our emails, checking out where we surf on the web.
Well, I never feel alone, 'cause you're out there with your headphones.
Hello.
And you really listen.
Thank you, Roy Zimmerman. Well, apparently, they're listening at the White House. Not quite sure who they're listening to, but the report from the handpicked committee of insiders in the spook community about how to fix the problems at the NSA is going to be fast-tracked for release. And as recently as yesterday, Jay Carney at the White House said, in January sometime, we'll get that out. But now they're telling us that it would release sometime today the report of the Presidential Advisory Committee that has issued more than 40 recommendations about how to alter the NSA's data gathering at home and abroad. Now, some has already leaked. For example, they want to continue to collect the metadata, the phone call record information. They just want the phone companies to keep it and the NSA to go and ask for individual account information. That doesn't completely solve the problem. It's better than what we have now. But it's that kind of minor modification, cosmetic changes, that I expect to come from this group. Now, we're told that some members of it favor splitting the job description that is currently held by Keith Alexander. He runs the NSA, and he is the director of the United States Cyber Command. Obama has indicated that while Keith Alexander will retire early next year, that he expects to nominate a replacement who will wear both hats. Now, I think that this, in some ways, is non-essential. For me, I would rather see two people hold those two jobs. I don't think it should be the same person. But it's a distraction from the real issues of the violation of the rights of American citizens in the United States to be free from intrusive search and dragnet surveillance. And so we have to be careful as some of these recommendations surface, and this is going to be the phony debate that Obama said he welcomed, going back to May 23rd when he gave his speech, and in some of his responses to the Ed Snowden revelations. Yeah, we need a debate about this, the president has said, only he hasn't particularly engaged in such a debate. And while I'm deeply skeptical about the work of this handpicked committee, it remains to be seen what else is in their recommendations, and I'll hold my fire until I've had a chance to fully review them. But I think that what we're seeing here is a lot of political theater, and the timing here, you know, if you release something a week before Christmas, there are a lot of people who will never hear about it. Because when school lets out and people head away for the holidays, their routines change and their access to news shifts as well. And so this could be a way to bury this report and just move on after we clink our glasses on New Year's Eve. But it is a shift, and I think it's worth noting. Now, I didn't get to see Sunday's episode of 60 Minutes. I was at a holiday party, and I didn't bother to go to the website to take a look at it. So I'm going to present to you a critique of a 60 Minutes package about the NSA with the acknowledgement that I didn't actually see this. But this comes from our friends at Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, and it follows on a similar analysis that appeared in the British newspaper The Guardian, at least at their website, on Monday. And they took a look at this report on the NSA and how CBS correspondent John Miller handled it. Now, at the beginning, John Miller said, "Full disclosure, I once worked in the office of the Director of National Intelligence, where I saw firsthand how secretly the NSA operates." Well, Fair notes that his full disclosure didn't mention that he first was a spokesman for the NYPD, and he also directed public relations for the FBI. So, John Miller, he's got a job at CBS, but he's a made man in the black ops of the United States of America. So he trots out Keith Alexander, the current head of the NSA, and begins by saying that the NSA isn't collecting everybody's email. Alexander goes on to say, "We're not collecting everybody's phone things." Huh? That's not a very good description of from a guy who, you know, should know the lingo of what he does. And, of course, Fair contradicts that with a citation from the New York Times, August 8th of this year, reporting that the NSA copies and sifts through most emails sent into or out of the country. Then Miller followed up by noting that there's a perception out there that the NSA is widely collecting the content of the phone calls of Americans. What critics are actually talking about is the collection of metadata on phone calls. And as posed, Miller's question only gave Alexander a chance to look like he's debunking an important myth about the agency. Miller reported, "Alexander agreed to talk to us because he believes the NSA has not told its story well." And Fair's comment here says that that feeling seemed to be shared by CBS, that the NSA's real problem is ineffective public relations. In a web-only video interview with Miller and the show's producers, Miller says, "We've heard plenty from the critics. We've heard a lot from Ed Snowden." And so the idea is to let the NSA spin up at will on 60 Minutes without being challenged, having a softball interviewer who used to work in the spy community? This is a new low point, and CBS is really setting new low points on a regular basis. Laura Logan has been suspended, but the insider reports are that she will return to the boob tube in January. So this is very interesting, and this is really good critical analysis of bad reporting in the corporate media. I commend Fair for it. I commend the folks at The Guardian for their critical analysis, and I invite you to look more critically at the media that you consume on a regular basis. I want to thank the people who support my work here at peterbcollins.com, including Yolanda Sergi-Wandell, Matthew Gabrenia, he's in Boston, Jens Nielsen, Janet Price, they're all subscribers to this podcast. And I want to thank you, particularly here at the Holiday Times, for all the people who've been generous enough to support my work, those of you who subscribe and download the podcast on a regular basis. And it really is important validation of the work that I do here. And I'm grateful to you for it. Now, if you're not a subscriber, maybe the holiday spirit will sweep you into taking action. Just go to my website, and at peterbcollins.com, just under my picture in the upper left-hand corner of the homepage, there's a link that says sign up. Click on that, and you can get a subscription for $5 a month, cancel anytime, or our best deal is the $50 annual subscription. And I've got a bonus book for you. I have a limited number of copies of Max Blumenthal's Goliath book that are on the way here. So if you're a new subscriber and you want that book, be sure to email me of your intentions and I'll hold one of the limited copies for you. And I'm also waiting for replenishment of our Kona coffee stock. So the bonus book is what I have for you right now. So follow the links at peterbcollins.com and thank you for your support. Now, the other way you can support us that just takes a few clicks and doesn't cost you a penny is to follow the links in the show file for this podcast or in the vertical banner ad on the left-hand side of the website at peterbcollins.com, and that will take you to audible.com. They have more than 150,000 audiobooks that you can download to your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or other MP3 gadget. And right now, if you sign up for a free 30-day trial at Audible, Your first audiobook download is free, and you can choose any title from their vast collection. And when you do that, Audible.com will pay me $15 for each trial membership. Even if you cancel before the end of the month and have no cost to yourself, I get to keep the $15. Isn't that sweet? So please help me out with this no-risk, no-cost way that you can kick in $15 to support the Peter B. Collins podcast. Just follow the links at my website to audible.com. Yesterday, we reported that Ed Snowden had made an appeal to the president of Brazil, Dilma Rousseff, to trade his knowledge about the U.S. spying programs targeted on Brazil for permanent political asylum. And according to the newspaper Folha de São Paulo, Brazil has no plans to grant asylum to Snowden, even after his offer was revealed. And there is some discussion going on in Brazil, but so far the posture of the president is not to do that. And it seems that they're more worried about complicating relations with the United States than exactly what it means for Mr. Snowden himself. So we'll watch that and see if there isn't some change in posture. Of course, we're also watching the trial balloon that was floated from the NSA over the past week about possibly offering amnesty to Ed Snowden if he'll come home and tell the NSA what he grabbed from them. Well, on the other fronts related to the police state that is the United States of America, the Senate Intelligence Committee has asked the CIA for an internal study that the lawmakers believe is broadly critical of the CIA's detention interrogation program, but was withheld from congressional oversight committees. So there are two studies, one internal at the CIA and the other done by the Senate Intelligence Committee that was completed a year ago and is still being suppressed. That's a 6,000-page report, spent $30-plus million preparing it. And Senator Feinstein, who I'm usually sharply critical of, to her credit, wants to see the at least the executive summary of that declassified and is trying to move that through the Congress right now. But as Carolyn Crass seeks to be confirmed to be the counsel at the Central Intelligence Agency, she is facing opposition from some of the progressive Democrats, like Mark Udall, a senator from Colorado, who says he will not vote to confirm her until she clears up this issue. So it appears that the CIA's internal report was never shared with the Senate as it was conducting its, I guess, external report. And perhaps there are differences there that show that there perhaps was a lie or two told by the CIA. Could you imagine that? And so Feinstein says her committee will soon vote to adopt the Senate report's executive summary and conclusion, but it's unclear whether the CIA will release its report. Now, the other issue that is between Ms. Crass and her confirmation is that she came out of the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel. That is the office that wrote the memos that allegedly authorized the president to select people to be killed by drone strikes, even including American citizens. And because of leaks, there was a white paper version of those memos that was released. But even at this state, the members of the Senate Intelligence Committee have not been able to get copies, have not been able to share them with those in the House and Senate who don't serve on the respective intelligence committees. And I think this is a very serious constitutional issue. The idea that Obama can stonewall the memo that he says permits him to kill people and can hide behind secrecy and duplicity, that doesn't work for me. Not at all. Well, good news, bad news. 20% fewer journalists were killed in the line of duty in 2013. But still, 71 journalists were killed worldwide, and there was a huge spike in abductions of journalists. The regions with the largest number of reporters killed were Asia with 24, the Middle East and North Africa with 23. The most dangerous countries for reporters, Syria, Somalia, Pakistan, followed by India, the Philippines, which have replaced Mexico and Brazil. Although the number of journalists killed in Brazil, 5, was the same as last year. Let's take a moment to thank the real journalists who do put their lives on the line because they think we deserve to know what they are able to observe. It's a simple notion in a free society. It's become corrupted, manipulated. And for every Laura Logan, there's a real journalist who's putting his or her life at risk to bring us important information. The Roman Catholic Archdiocese of New York has won a round in its bogus struggle to avoid the ugly imposition of the Obamacare contraceptive policy on schools and hospitals and other entities that are owned by the Catholic Church. And as you may know, this is a whole trumped-up issue. Because the Catholics, particularly the American Catholic bishops, have never before said that it is a deep moral teaching of the Church that contraception is, a sin. It is a notion that is not enforced, and yet the bishops, who have the worst record in the whole damn world on issues related to sexuality, believe that they can use government mechanisms like the courts to force Catholics to do what they're unable to persuade Catholics to do. And the idea that because an insurance policy that is paid for by an employer that happens to be a religious group includes coverage for contraception doesn't require a single person to use it. And so this is a completely specious argument. But the Catholics won this round. It will probably have to go to the Supreme Court. I want to note that my friend Brad Friedman of bradblog.com provides exceptional coverage of issues related to elections in this country, and he's been following for several weeks now the disputed vote count in the Commonwealth of Virginia related to the race for Attorney General. And today, the Republican candidate for AG has conceded the race to his Democratic rival. The Republican is State Senator Mark Obenshain. He requested that the recount when he was trailing his rival by 165 votes out of 2.2 million cast. But Mark Herring has been declared the winner. And I think that's a complete sweep. Yeah. Democrats have all of the statewide constitutional offices in Virginia right now. And that's a big turnaround. In Syria, the hot war continues. Syrian warplanes killed more than 100 people in the city of Aleppo, including many women and children. And as we celebrate the holidays and things slow down here in the United States, millions have been forced to flee in Syria, and they're living in tents where it's been cold and in some cases unusual snow has occurred. And the brutality of that civil war continues. And we think about how back in August and September, Obama was ready to take us to war because he contended that the Assad government was using chemical weapons to kill innocent people. Now, I object to killing innocent people with chemical weapons. But I also object to killing innocent people with bombs from warplanes or from helicopter gunships or from shells from tanks. And if we would use the same level of determination to try to end the civil war in Syria as we did over the whole drama about chemical weapons, well, I'd feel a whole lot better about it. Now, one of the fastest growing categories of crime in the United States is the theft of cell phones, especially the new smartphones, iPhones, you know what they are. And our district attorney here in San Francisco, the former police chief, George Gascon, has been dealing with this, and it's a real burden on his department. And he has asked the manufacturers to activate what's called a kill switch, so that if somebody steals my phone, I can go online or call a call center and have my phone disabled. That would make my phone worthless, as they say, like a brick. But for some reason, the phone carriers, Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile, and U.S. Cellular, say that the technology of being able to shut down your phone would add an enormous customer service burden. Troubleshooting for mobile devices often falls to the wireless stores where the customers bought them, and setting up a kill switch can be a challenge for lay users and time-consuming for staffers. What bullshit. I mean, come on. If the NSA can use the GPS and my communication with cell towers from my cell phone to track my location, why the hell can't I use the power to shut down my phone if somebody steals it? I simply don't get that. Here in the Bay Area, the FBI has renewed its effort to track down Daniel Andreas Sandiego. You may remember the early era video game called Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? Well, the FBI's updated it to Where in the World is Daniel Andreas Sandiego? Now, he is the first suspected domestic terrorist added to the FBI's most wanted list. He's been on it since April of 2009. He's an animal rights activist who is accused of firebombing some animal laboratories. On August 28, 2003, he's accused of planting bombs in the campus of a biotech company in Emeryville, near Oakland, California. And another bomb went off at a nutritional products company in the town of Pleasanton, about 30 miles east, about a month later. And he managed to throw off his FBI tag. They haven't seen him since October 6 of 2003. That's over 10 years. And I bring this up because I think this is a really misplaced use of the FBI's authorities. No one was killed or injured in these events, and I don't have any proof that Dan Sandiego is actually responsible. But we passed a really bad law in 2004 or 2005 that makes vandalism or bombings in pursuit of animal rights issues, a crime subject to much greater punishment. And I fundamentally dispute that. I disagree with it. Because the motivation to commit a crime, to me, is not as significant as what the crime is. And there are plenty of laws to prosecute people for vandalism, for exploding devices on somebody else's property. And to simply add gratuitous penalties, I think, is un-American. And I hope you'll speak up. I just did. Well, the Christian world lost two of its wackiest figures in the last few days. Harold Camping was the preacher from Oakland, California, who ran the Family Radio Network, and he twice predicted the end of the world. At age 92... his prediction came true, but only for him, a couple of days ago. And I've learned just recently that Fred Phelps, the hate-filled pastor of the church in Kansas, I think it's in Topeka, the guy who took his family members to protest funerals of soldiers killed in Afghanistan and Iraq, with signs that say God hates fags, and that those soldiers died because we've expanded the legal rights for gay people to serve in the military. Well, Fred Phelps is a he was, a very sick man. And his sickness infected his children. And over the years, I interviewed Fred himself a couple of times, a couple of his daughters. And they are Bible-thumping lunatics. Absolutely God Squad batshit crazy. And I just wonder, given their belief systems, not mine, when Fred Phelps and Harold Camping approach those pearly gates, and St. Peter's there to talk to him, is he going to say, yeah, come on in, there's a whole section for preachers who said that God hates fags? Or maybe they'll say there's a section over here for the fag haters who God doesn't love. Whatever. Thanks for listening.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.